Good evening and welcome to the April 2017 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. Our first agenda item today is, with a great deal of pleasure, I'd like to introduce our newest health commissioner, Gina Bryman. Oh, there she is. There she is. As you know, Gina is a family nurse practitioner, and she's currently working out at the CHC site in Napomo, correct?
Yes.
So we are delighted to have you with us. At this time, we have a full health commission, so hooray for us. So we will hopefully all
Thank
of us
you.
Get around to introduce ourselves and let you get to know us, and we look forward to having you as part of us for the upcoming very long time.
Thank you very much.
We do need to approve our minutes from our last meeting of March 13th, 2017. You all had a copy of them. Anybody have any additions, corrections, comments? If not, we'll ask Jean to do her magic that she does and get them up on the website for everybody to take a look at. At this time, we allow time for public comment for persons desiring to speak on issues other than any of our scheduled items that are within the scope of our health commission and its interest. Seeing no public out there tonight, we will go ahead and move on to our program for this evening. And I'm going to ask Commissioner Grantham to introduce the program and our speakers.
Good evening. So tonight's program is going to be from the Tobacco Control Program. They're going to be talking about electronic nicotine delivery devices. And our speakers are Janelle Merzan and Grace. Is Grace here? Thank you. Grace Calhoun, welcome.
Hello. All right. Good evening. I apologize in advance. I'm sick. And I'm Janelle Merzan. I'm a health educator at the Tobacco Control Program. So as a result, Grace Calhoun, our lovely intern, will be doing the predominant amount of speaking tonight. As well, as you guys know, I think Kathleen as well is ill and is not here to do her portion of the speech. She was going to cover some of the topics of Prop 99, the master settlement, Prop 10, and the recent Prop 56. She mentioned that she was going to go over those at a later date. If you guys do have any questions regarding those issues, we can answer them to the best that we can at the end of our presentation. But to no further ado, we'll go ahead and start with Grace.
Thank you, Janelle. So we're just waiting for the PowerPoint to come up. There we go. Okay. So like Janelle mentioned, my name is Grace Calhoun, and I will be talking about electronic nicotine delivery devices. Throughout the PowerPoint, they will be referred to as ENDDS or ENDS. They're used interchangeably in the news and journal articles, so don't be alarmed. And because electronic nicotine delivery device is very repetitive to say over and over, I might just say e-cigarettes, but I'm referring to the same thing. So first of all, I wanted to go over what exactly electronic nicotine delivery devices include. So these are more than just e-cigarettes, despite what I just mentioned. They include e-cigars, e-pipes, hookah pens, vape pens, e-hookahs, and many more devices that are able to take nicotine liquids and transform them into an aerosol that people commonly mistake as a vapor and dispel into the environment as well as people's lungs to ingest nicotine. So there are about 450 brands of these,
They're very far-reaching in our society, and so that's what we wanted to touch on. So first of all, the breakdown of an electronic nicotine delivery device. There are four main parts. The first part is the battery, and that's what powers the device. The second part is the atomizer, and that's what takes the e-liquid, which is stored in the cartridge, and it heats it up into the aerosol that users then inhale through the mouthpiece. So the cartridge is what stores the e-liquid, puts it into the atomizer, and puts it back out through the mouthpiece. So that's essentially how these work. They're fully battery-operated and rechargeable. The harmful elements of e-cigarettes include propylene glycol, nicotine, acetaldehyde, heavy metals, and formaldehyde. And that's just to name a few. They have at least 10 chemicals that have been listed on California's Prop 65 as carcinogenic or harmful to reproduction. Some other chemicals of note are benzene, which is the chemical that was used in popcorn factories that gave workers popcorn long about a couple decades ago, isoprene, nicotine, toluene, nickel, chromium, cadmium, and lead. So we also have a lot of heavy metals in there. Next slide, please. Thank you. Okay, so electronic nicotine delivery device aerosol is not harmless. And that's something that we really are working to dispel in the public health community, because a lot of people think that just because they kind of cause less harm means they're essentially harmless, which is something that we're trying to get people to understand is just not true. So e-cigarette juice is actually really poisonous. And one story that's always stood out to me in the news was a woman who fell asleep with her e-cigarette in her bed next to her. The e-cigarette broke, the liquid spilled onto her bed sheets, and she was later admitted to a hospital for cardiac problems. So this is very, very potent liquid that we're dealing with, and it actually has caused a lot of poisonings, both to children and animals, and obviously to adult users. So while we don't understand all of the health consequences of e-cigarettes and electric nicotine delivery devices, we do know that they are dangerous, and there's a lot that we haven't discovered, and that's making this generation of users essentially a guinea pig generation. So the health risks of e-cigarettes. So not only do e-cigarettes cause brain damage and potential addiction to youth especially, e-cigarettes also cause respiratory issues, asthma, heart problems, and can affect fetal development and postnatal development due to the nature of nicotine being able to cross the placenta. Also to date, no published studies have examined the effects of chronic exposure, which again brings us back to the fact that this is a guinea pig generation. So e-cigarettes as a quit aid. The FDA nor the Slo County Tobacco Control Program approve e-cigarettes as a way to quit smoking. These can actually help people continue nicotine, especially due to the fact that you're still taking something, putting it up to your mouth, inhaling it, and blowing it out into the atmosphere. Studies have actually shown that e-cigarettes encourage dual use, so somebody who starts smoking an e-cigarette might not even necessarily stop smoking a cigarette. And lastly, adult smokers who use e-cigarettes as a way to quit are far less likely to actually quit. Okay, so e-cigarettes in youth. This is a huge public health problem because they're actually the most commonly used method of choice for youth. They surpassed regular conventional cigarettes in 2014 for youth. Three times as many teens have smoked e-cigarettes in 2013 compared to 2011, and since then those numbers have risen. The majority of United States teens believe that electronic nicotine delivery devices are not harmful, and we'll go on to talk about that later, but it has to do with marketing towards youth, which just exemplifies how this is a really big problem in younger generations. So this chart shows the differences in nicotine choices for youth. The blue shows students who only smoke cigarettes. The red is youth who only smoke or use e-cigarettes, and then the green is people who use both. So you can tell that even as youth get older and older, the prevalence of using e-cigarettes increases, And in general, because this is from 2013 to 2015, you can see that it's the preferred way of getting nicotine for our youth.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and speak on this slide. So this is end statistics specifically pertaining to Slow County and youth. For Slow County in comparison to California. So the first one is quite alarming. Not that this whole presentation isn't, but teens ever smoked an e-cigarette. Slow County, 31.9% in comparison to California's average, which is 7.9%. I know the first question I had, Kathleen had, and I'm sure you guys were wondering, what on earth is Slow? Like, why are the kids in Slow County so high, so much more likely to smoke an e-cigarette than the rest of California? There's a few factors. We're coming out of a recession. There's more stores that are opened. Those stores sell e-cigarettes. We're also coming out of a recession, which means more parents have money to give their kids. Those kids are seeing all this marketing, and they're buying the e-cigarettes. The money is a huge factor, and that's a big contributor to what's happening in Slow County. Oh, there we go. So the percentage of stores that sell e-cigarettes, 88.9% in Slow County, in comparison to 62.3% in California. That, I think, is relatively reflective of the previous statistic. Teens ever smoked a basic traditional cigar, or, I mean a cigarette, 22.8% in Slow County, and we're actually under average in California, which is 23.4%. Both of these, or all three of these statistics, came from the 2015 California Health Interview Survey from UCLA and the 2016 Healthy Stores for Healthy Communities Report 2016.
Okay, so this chart we got from the CDC, and it's going to be a transition into talking about youth and e-cigarette marketing. So in the green, that's supposed to represent the dollars spent on e-cigarette advertising, and it's outlined by the red line, which is the past 30-day e-cigarette use among youth. And so this is exactly the pattern that's happening right now, and you'll see why in the next slide. So e-cigarette manufacturers, first of all, they're often the same manufacturers who are making Camels and Marlboros and Newports. And so they're using the same tips and tricks and techniques. And if they're not, they're copying someone who is. And that's making their products look strikingly similar to candy and to products that younger kids see in the supermarkets and in stores all the time, and equate with being tasty, with being safe, and with being a kid. And so that's primarily demonstrated on the picture to the left. And then in another picture, we can see that a lot of these e-cigarettes and regular cigarettes are sold at what's called a point of sale, so usually at the checkout register right next to the candy. So we're priming these kids to think that cigarettes are safe and that there's something that they can do when they're old enough. And this is maximizing the chances of kids getting hooked to tobacco and nicotine at a very young age. In fact, most lifelong users of nicotine start before they're 18 years old. So this picture kind of speaks for itself, but you can see that the Newport poster and the, which Newports are a conventional cigarette, and the ad for blue e-cigarettes are strikingly similar. They look like a snapshot of a PG-13 movie. It's not something you would think is unsafe or harmful or going to lead you to a lifelong of addiction, a lifetime of addiction. So the statistics are also quite alarming. We have about 7 in 10 United States youth who have been exposed to ads, and that's from 2014. So over 18 million kids have seen e-cigarette ads. More than half of middle school students in the United States have been exposed to ads in retail stores, which, again, especially when you're in junior high, a lot of times you're going to 7-Elevens to pick up a soda or to get candy, and then you're seeing an ad for e-cigarettes, not realizing that it's extremely dangerous to your health. Lastly, 85% of youth prefer flavors, and e-cigarettes make that very easy to achieve that goal. Kids are able to buy cinnamon roll flavored e-liquids or candy apple, vanilla cupcake, sour cherry. It goes on and on. The flavors are insane. But they've poured millions of dollars into research to figure out what kids want so they can give them what they want. So this leads to the societal impact. If we continue this pattern of e-cigarette usage, it's going to become a major problem just like cigarettes did. First of all, e-cigarettes are allowing smoking to be renormalized. There are places that won't let regular cigarettes in, but will let e-cigarettes be used, which sends the public the wrong message that somehow e-cigarettes are okay for everyone else to breathe and for everyone else to smoke. Also, e-cigarettes lead to environmental pollution. Just like regular cigarettes, the toxins that are in the vapor are also going to be released into the world, and the secondhand smoke is damaging to people's lungs. Third, dual use of cigarettes and e-cigarettes. So, like we talked about before, as a quitting device, people who are smoking e-cigarettes aren't even necessarily going to stop smoking cigarettes. So we're just making the cigarette problem worse. It's not even replacing the problem. E-cigarettes are also a gateway for kids to start smoking regular cigarettes. And not only that, but it's e-cigarettes are basically teaching a young kid's brain that these addictive and poor behaviors are okay. When you're a youth, your brain isn't fully developed, your prefrontal cortex and your hippocampus are not developed, your judgment skills are not ready or where they should be to be making those types of decisions, and yet we're letting youth do that. Also, a lot of e-cigarette devices allow you to put marijuana, meth, and cocaine, and you're able to smoke that too. So you can do some pretty horrible drugs with these things that are touted to be harmless. So looking to the future, the Tobacco Control Program is working on and striving to accomplish certain goals. One of them is always to reduce the demand of nicotine and tobacco through public health education and health promotion in communities, schools, as well as tobacco cessation classes. We also want to incorporate e-cigarettes and electronic nicotine delivery devices into pre-existing laws so that they can be regulated as cigarettes already are, because, like I've mentioned, the secondhand smoke is very detrimental. So far, SLO, PASO, and Grover have all incorporated ENDDS into their tobacco laws. Paso Robles actually just passed their first smoking ordinance period, so... We also are working towards greater enforcement of tobacco control laws, including e-cigarette usage. We want to prohibit indoor and public use, as well as take a stance along with many other major health organizations, such as the CDC, and choose to not endorse e-cigarettes as a smoking cessation method. Very lastly, because e-cigarettes are new, there is a chance to curb the social norms and not make them so socially acceptable, which will hopefully reduce the use of e-cigarettes for youth. So that's it. Thank you.
Well, you did a great job, Grace. Thanks for coming in and filling
in.
I'm sure we all have some questions.
Yes.
And let me just start out with one that I have, and then we'll just go down the line here, and everybody can ask theirs. The slide that you showed, the blue one that had the table that showed how our county compared to the rest of the state, and we have a higher percentage of stores that sell e-cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
With some of the things that we are talking about, do we ever talk about, you know, how I believe in this county there's only so many liquor licenses that are allowed? Could we somehow do this with stores that are allowed to sell these?
Yes.
Do they have to be, are they licensed to sell cigarettes of any kind? They have to apply for something?
That's a really good question. So that goes back to incorporating if electronic cigarettes or ENDS are incorporated into that city's smoking / tobacco definition. And so like the city of San Luis, for example, the stores that sell e-cigarettes or ENDS, it is regulated like selling a pack of cigarettes. To my knowledge, Los Osos, which is an unincorporated town, it's not regulated. They don't have a TRL, which is a tobacco retail license. They're regulated under the county's unincorporated. And so there are varying degrees of how we can, I think, control and limit the amount of stores that do sell them.
I hope that answers your question.
Okay. Who wants to start? Tamar, do you have any questions? We'll come this way.
Thank you for the presentation today. I was wondering, since a lot of the presentation was really sort of targeted around youth, could you speak to some of the programming that you offer Sewell County youth?
Yeah, so when I made this presentation, I felt that it was important to surround youth being the primary target because the Surgeon General's report recently came out, I want to say within the last month and a half, on tobacco, and the Surgeon General's report targeted youth specifically because of the harmful effects that e-cigarettes can do with the developing brain of a child. And in addition to that, because of these alarming spiking rates of e-cigarettes. And so that is the reason why I chose to kind of target. What we do in this county to specifically address e-cigarettes and cigarette prevention or tobacco prevention at whole, we try to do a lot of outreach. We do a lot of outreach with the local junior highs throughout the county. Kick Butts Day was an example of what we recently did. I think that was 2 weeks ago. March 15th was the day that is Kick Butts Day, but in Sewell County we expanded Kick Butts Day to be a week-long event, and we try to hit as many junior highs as we could, and interactively we're just kind of trying to like hang out with the kids and just talk to them on their level about what e-cigarettes are, what cigarettes are, why they're bad, why your parents shouldn't be smoking them, why you don't want to try to smoke them, give them prizes to answer questions, like trivia, just things that someone, you know, a junior high kid would find interesting and relevant. And that's, so that would be the most of it. Oh, we also do kids' fairs, too. we did the Children's Day in the plaza on this past Saturday. That, I think, was targeting a younger group of kids. A lot of younger kids don't know what e-cigarettes are, and so there's kind of a fine line of, do we want to introduce this to you and say, here, look at this, this is what you shouldn't do, or wait until they kind of have an idea of what it is and then teach them why it's not bad. And that's also a big reason of why we really focus on the junior high age group, because they already have an idea but maybe / hopefully haven't tried it.
Thank you. That was a great presentation, both of you. I have a couple of questions. First of all, is there labeling, age labeling, or can anybody buy these products?
So as I think it was last June 2016, California changed the law to make e-cigarettes under the same category as a tobacco product, so as a cigarette.
So they can see them, but they can't. They have to get someone to buy them for them.
Okay, or... so we entered a whole new topic. So right now, as of June 2016, the tobacco law to buy tobacco or cigarettes changed to 21. And I feel like that was a huge accomplishment. We should be so proud.
Yes.
With that came... I don't know how to phrase this. They took out the portion of where it's illegal for someone under the age of 18 to smoke a cigarette or e-cigarette. So a minor, when I say minor, I mean someone under 21, can legally smoke a cigarette or an e-cigarette right next to a police officer, and it's not against the law. They just legally cannot buy it.
It's crazy.
It's very crazy. The city of Atascadero contacted me last Monday, the commander at the police department, and said, what on earth, and had this, do you know that this is how the law is written? And I said, yes, I do. They're currently trying to take steps to create an entirely new law because they can't amend this. They have to create an entirely new one, so they're in the process of taking steps to make it illegal for under 21 to smoke.
Wow. My other question is the cost. Is it comparable? I hear that cigarettes went up to $2 a pack, so they're up to, I don't know, a lot.
Yeah, so
As of the 1st of April, the tobacco tax went into effect. So $2 tax on top of whatever they were paying already across the line. E-cigarettes are a whole new category. Technically, you have to buy a device. That $2 tax doesn't go on this device. The comparable tax is relevant when it comes to e-juice that contains nicotine, because nicotine is derived from the tobacco plant. Cigars are not cigarettes, but they have nicotine that was derived from a tobacco plant. So there are taxes that are comparable to the $2 tax when it comes to other nicotine
So
products.
I know very little about it. So, like, if a pack of cigarettes is $8 and you smoke this using some sort of a cartridge, is that comparable to a pack of cigarettes or a cigarette? Or I'm just trying to figure out how expensive it is compared to just regular smoking.
Those are really, really valid questions because these are so new. There is not very much regulation on e-cigarettes, and there's a lot of we're lacking empirical research on all different ends. I don't want to say anyone, but an e-juice vial would be approximately a couple inches and have X amount of, milliliters in there. We do not know, and we're currently not regulating the amount of what's in what. We do not know. I think I'm buying 2 milliliters of nicotine in this e-juice, but I do not know. And the public doesn't understand that, I think, as well. And that's another thing that we try to do is get out, is there's really a lot of uncertainty. Joe, who works at the gas station down the street, his boss could have created that e-juice and is now selling it. There is regulations that the FDA is trying to put in place to make this more controlled, but we haven't come to those stages yet. So they are supposed to be comparable taxes, but there's just so much uncertainty. We can't say yes, there's an exact proportion that is. Does that answer your question?
Oh, it's helping.
Okay.
You did great.
Hi, thank you for a wonderful presentation. I actually learned something. I'm in primary. Most of my patients are adult, geriatric, adolescents, over, at least 17, 16 and above. And many of them do smoke, and they're using e-cigarette to stop smoking. Now, if I can have some kind of a brochure, like educational materials, that have a key point that we can hand out to, as well as the posters about harmful of e-cigarette that we can post it on a waiting area, on a pediatric, because all children have to come in before they go to school. So we all see them. We have some materials that we can post it so the parents and children can take a look at it, that'll really help us.
We 100% can provide that. We have ample material on different age groups for e-cigarette prevention and why it's bad, why you shouldn't start, why you should stop, etc. I can get your contact info, and so we can get that material out to you and the other appropriate providers.
Perfect.
I don't have any additional questions. They've been answered along the way.
Same thing for me. Nice presentation. Good answers.
Thanks. Well, I have a lot of questions, but I don't think they're going to be answered very soon about this. This is all so new. I was curious about Joe at the garage down the street mixing up this stuff. Mm-hmm. Is there any regulation on what you can put in these things besides currently prescribed substances, amphetamines and so forth that you mentioned?
So to my knowledge, there is a degree of regulations, but it's very loose. Do you know any of the?
So the FDA has recently been regulating these e-liquids, but they're
have been certain instances of companies being grandfathered in, for example, and there are a ton of e-liquids that are on the market that still have chemicals like benzene, which gave people a really rare lung disease a couple decades ago. We learned that lesson, but it's still being produced and distributed. So like she was saying, the FDA did finally start trying to regulate the Wild West of e-cigarettes and e-liquids, but they have a lot of ground they still need to cover. And in the meantime, there are a lot of people who can still be just producing things that have no quality control and have unknown quantities of unknown substances.
Have you seen any predictions from public health experts about what we might expect to see in 10 or 15 years as a result of this? It could only be speculation, of course.
So we realized that we were kind of behind on the bandwagon. From the journals I've read and what my understanding is that we didn't think that it would make it this far, this fast already. So we're kind of behind the times already, and that's unfortunate because we've seen what cigarettes have done, and we've had all the sample time to tailor what we need to do. We know. The prediction, I don't want to speak and say anything incorrectly, but again, we're behind the times and we're just trying to play catch up right now. And that's kind of a scary thought when you think about how lethal cigarettes are.
Just one other reaction. And maybe the slide that annoyed me the most was the one that compared the packaging with the candies.
The marketing.
Yeah, it's so sleazy.
It is. And they know that that's what's going to appeal to the kids. And the internet is a really easy access to. We didn't mention that in this presentation because that could go on and on and on, but it's easy. Kids are smart. They know how to get what they want.
They will. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. I learned a lot, and as the mom of a middle schooler, I found it especially frightening and helpful. So I was going to follow up on the advertising as well. I'm wondering where the predominance of the ads are, whether it's mostly internet or whether they're allowed on TV or radio. And then, like, what kinds of claims they're making? Are they making false claims about safety in the ads? And is that something we could target?
Okay, so I'm going to answer this to the best of my abilities here, but I don't think that they're allowed on TV anymore. Okay. At first, you have to realize that pretty much everything related to electronic nicotine delivery devices was unregulated, so the advertising was just rampant. Now you have things like the California or the Healthy Stores for Healthy Communities survey that are avidly watching and documenting how much advertising is going on and just enforcing more accountability on the parts of store owners and tobacco retailers. So the majority of the advertising, I believe, is in retail stores, especially gas stations. That's just speaking on behalf of the fact that I was the one conducting that survey for Slo County, and that's primarily what I had to survey as far as, like, monitoring the advertising. But online, you can find anything if you're looking for it. So even if there's not advertising necessarily on a given page, there are things like Facebook and social media sites that use algorithms to tailor your advertising. So if you're at all interested in e-cigarettes, you will be advertised them on your homepage or wherever you're visiting.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. That's scary. Mm-hmm. And then I had one other question. I don't know if it's known or not, but just about the secondhand material, I guess. Have people studied how far it will travel compared to smoke and, like, what the relative risks are with respect to the chemicals and, that sort of thing?
So at UCSF about 2 months ago, there's a very prominent tobacco researcher. His name is Stanton Glantz. And he conducted a survey with, I believe, rats. It was some type of small Okay. Mm-hmm. So with rats. And he exposed them to varying levels of e-cigarette secondhand smoke versus cigarette secondhand smoke. And he found specifically that the effects on the skin elasticity were the same, regardless of the level of e-cigarette exposure. Of course, there are a lot of areas that still need to be covered. And if you just look back to the history of cigarettes and how long it took for the 1964 Surgeon General's report, you can't make any allegations about e-cigarettes without having the data to prove it. Mm-hmm. So it's very slow. Like, all of these findings are very slow. But with studies like that, you can assume that other effects are going to be the same. But I don't know about any other studies.
Yeah, there aren't. No, I'm aware of. Yeah, to my knowledge, there aren't any to date published articles that are answering that question, mm-hmm. because, again, it's so new, and there's so much uncertainty that we haven't had time to see these long term.
Right. Hurry up, scientists.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful presentation. You just stirred our minds up so much. We have all these questions. Mine was definitely going to be along the topic of secondhand, so the smoke effect, you've sort of answered some of that, but I live in such a smoke-free environment, I can't picture what exactly do we mean when we say secondhand. Do we mean literally those rats were caged here and there's smoke being directly hit on them? Because I'm picturing what's happening in someone's home. They smoke in a separate room, and now children and animals come in, so it's not hitting them directly. But what do we mean when we say secondhand smoke?
So the secondhand, in general, if I was just to say what secondhand smoke is with a cigarette, it would be me exhaling something, as taking a puff of a cigarette, exhaled all those toxins that went into the air that were reaction to the combustion that happened when I just inhaled, 7,500 toxins? Yeah. Over 7,000 toxins in a cigarette. That can travel. You can smell the smell of a cigarette smoke. From here, if I smoked, if you were down the street, most of us could smell, oh my God, someone's smoking down the street. With e-cigarettes, you can't really smell the smell. And that's part of, oh, it's not as bad. There's no smell. There's no smoke, but there is some smoke, but like that you can visually see with the human eye. But there is secondhand smoke that still have all of those same characteristics of going and traveling down the hallway, down the road. It's just you can't smell them because they're a different combination of chemicals that are being combined. To address the question about the Stanton Gland study at UCSF, I don't remember what the environment was.
I don't remember either, but usually with those studies, they use some type of simulator to replicate a person smoking a cigarette and then expelling that. But also, even if, like you said, you live in a house where no one's smoking and then just blowing it in the faces of children, there's still third-hand smoke, which is all of the residue of those chemicals, which are by nature very heavy. They get on your clothes, they get on couches, they get in your car seats. And what a lot of people don't know is that there's first-hand smoke, right? And then there's second-hand smoke, which the public has generally been aware that it's pretty bad. But third-hand smoke is almost just as bad as second-hand. And that's the scariest part, because you can't even see that smoke. You can just kind of smell it faintly in someone's car or on their couch or on their clothes. But
on
their hair. But that's still something that we're dealing with e-cigarettes.
That's really helpful. I'm glad we got that term third hand in there, because to be sort of transparent, I have a sibling that likes to go in a separate room in the house and says, oh, it's just e-vaping and it's nothing. It just falls to the ground.
Third hand smoke is a term that is relatively new, and we are getting relatively new studies. And cigarettes have been around for a long time, so that's scary in itself.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much. It's just been a wonderful presentation.
Thank you very much. I've got several questions here. One of them, you've talked a little bit about the county and city ordinances, and I'm familiar with a little bit with Atascadero, not so much their ordinances right now, but I'm glad to hear they're calling and finding out, because they have two vape shops within a block one within less than a block from the junior high school, and another one is right at the stop sign before you go a block to Monterey Road. And that vape shop, I didn't even realize what it was. I just thought, because they have a sign on it that says rare candy. And I thought, now what in the world is rare candy, and how can they make enough money to keep this shop in business? Then I noticed it says vape on it also. And so apparently that's how they're staying in business. But they're both within a block of schools. And it seems to me you can't have sex offenders, you can't have alcohol outlets, you can't have any of those within so many feet of schools. And it seems that that is something that could go throughout all the cities and the county, at least that step, and then beginning to look at those. Because the other thing is, and I know there's a, hopefully this lawsuit might give a little leverage on this, the vape shop in Cambria that sold the spice to the young kids where the two children were killed in the car accident. Mm-hmm. So I know there's going to be some more lawsuits on that and against that vape shop. So I don't know. It seems like locally we could at least look at some of the ordinances and that. And what are we doing?
So to address the proximity of the vape shop to the junior high, this is something that Kathleen was probably going to discuss in a little bit more depth. The end of our three-year plan is coming to an end June 30th, and we will start a one-year plan starting July 1st. And then after that one-year plan, so in 2018, we'll start a new three-year plan. Part of that new three-year plan, we're hoping to incorporate zone density, which would be specifically addressing the proximity of liquor stores or vape stores or any location that can sell vape or cigarette to a school. And that's something that we wanted to work on this upcoming first year, but I think it's going to be something that we have to work on in the 3 year. But that is going to be something we will be specifically addressing. It'll be one of our top three objectives.
Okay, well, you might get the cities on board sooner than that. So
yeah,
they're a lot more proactive. My other question is also, are you working with County Drug and Alcohol Services and their Friday Night Live programs to educate these kids at the junior high? And, you know, I'm sorry, but 1 week a year for kick butts, or in November when they have Red Ribbon Week, this is something that needs to be incorporated somehow in health classes and on campus where they're hearing it over and over. And what's being done with that?
So, yeah, we try to work with FNL as much as possible. The state of California wants us to work with the youth for obvious reasons. We recently found out that we are not allowed to go into schools by ourselves and educate kids. We're allowed to do it, I think, up to twice a year. And unless we're working with them after school, off campus, on their lunch, they're really tight regulations of when we can get this word out directly to the kids. So the way we can do it is to work with Friday Night Live, give them the information, and have them pass it on to the kids. Right now I'm actually working with an FNL coordinator within Cambria Junior High, and I'm giving him information on e-cigs tomorrow, actually. But it's unfortunate that we're not able to go in as liberally as we would like to because of the little fine details that somewhere say we cannot go in.
Well, does that allow you to work with the health? They all have some kind of health class. Are you able to work with us or do in-service with the teachers?
Yeah, and so there are caveats we can do, and we do go, like we were at San Luis High School a couple of months ago. We're going to Rio Grande High School to do a health class in May. Within the health class. Again, I'm not sure if that's something we're even allowed to report to the state that we're doing, because they don't want us in the schools for some crazy, I don't know what the specifics are of why they don't want us in there, but it's very limited amount of time that we're legally allowed to be in there to report to the state.
Well, I would hope you guys will really look into doing, the teachers have in-service hours throughout the year, and if you could go in and give them a presentation like you just did for us, mm-hmm. I think that would be invaluable because most of them are clueless about any of this.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic proposal. Hopefully, we can make that happen. With Prop 56 passing, we are fortunately able to expand our tobacco control program here in San Luis Obispo County. We're currently, it's me, and then Grace, our intern. Fortunately, we're going to be able to expand it to 4 additional health educators and a program manager. Obviously at Kathleen as well, but so we're going to go from a 1 to 4 to 5. So with that, hopefully that comes more ability to spend time on doing exactly what you just said.
Right. I just think you'd get more bang for the buck if you can in-service teachers, mm-hmm. Health clinic professionals, anybody, because most of them have educational components. Mm-hmm. Where, and this is a perfect thing to in-service that they might not even think. It's kind of off their radar mm-hmm. because it's not in their scope of work. Mm-hmm. But yet it is in what the prevention they can do with their patients and the students and the rest of them.
Yeah.
So I hope you get that at least in the plan and begin as you're adding more staff.
I think that's a fantastic idea, and I'll make sure I'll 100% relay that, Kathleen, that is something that we could do that'll keep us out of the schools, but still get the information out to the kids.
Right.
And that's the ultimate
right.
goal.
Another, because I did work in prevention for a long time at drug and alcohol, and I found the most effective in doing tobacco education, especially with the junior high, was just what we talked about with the advertising and showing them how they're being duped by the advertisers. The kids just ate that up, and they were, like, so astounded and angry. And they got really ticked off that somebody was duping them into that. But you have to, you know, we brought in magazine ads and all kinds of things to help them see how they were telling you, you know, you get the car, you get the girl, you get all the wonderful things if you're smoking these. And it's the same thing happening right now, that they're selling it to them as candy. And duping in helping them understand that that's going to poison a lot of preschoolers mm-hmm. because they think it's candy.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to backdoor them.
Yeah.
And that would be helpful. Okay, I think, and my last question was when you talked about when you're speaking with children, you kind of mentioned about why their parents shouldn't quit, but that's a hot button in the home. And if it's approached with, you know, what kind of resources are there for the kids to give their parents if they want to quit?
Yeah, you know, so that topic, when your parents should quit, is primarily brought up if they say, hey, my mom's a smoker, am I going to die from that? And that's when I'll use that as a segue into a conversation, because I was originally hired as the smoking cessation counselor for Slo County, and so that's what I was supposed to be spending all my time to, is going and offering the cessation classes, and then I kind of expanded my scope of work. But so when that conversation is brought up, that's when I let them know, oh, I work with people like your parents to help them quit and explain to them, and I make sure I don't just throw it out there and say, hey, tell your parents to quit.
Right. But I think it would be helpful if you offered them some resources.
Yeah.
Tell your parents to ask their doctor to help
yeah.
them quit or
yeah.
something, because
it's pointless.
It makes the conversation easier between the parent and child.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah. And that brought up something else the cessation classes. Those are the most asked for things that we have. Are they still going on? What's happening with those?
Yeah, so we 100% still have the smoking cessation classes that Grace and I both teach weekly, every week. continuously. We teach them Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We offer a class here in SLO. We have one in Atascadero. We have one in Paso. We have one at TEMA, at Transitional Mental Health Association in Atascadero. We also have one in Grover Beach. And I think those are all of our general classes. I personally also teach classes at the POGUE. So the Perinatal Outpatient Extended Group, I think is what POGUE stands for, in Atascadero and in Grover Beach, that I also get those women and their families as well. But we do offer those resources, and I try to spread the word as much as possible. The updates are not always made on the website like they should be, and that is something that I've asked to make sure that happens, and it just doesn't always happen.
If you have the flyer with the little tabs with your phone number, if you have those, I work at North County Connection Recovery Resource Center, and I have found that to be very effective. Those go quick.
Uh-huh.
So maybe resending those out to some of the health clinics and other providers around would be helpful, like Aegis and some of the different ones.
Yeah, we definitely can do that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you both very much. Janelle, was there anything else you wanted to cover that Kathleen was? I know she's offered to come, and I think we probably will have her, because we do have a couple of exciting things going on with tobacco.
Let's see.
While you're looking at that, let me just ask two quick things. I've heard the Healthy Stores for Healthy Communities ad running on the radio quite a bit. Do you know how long that ad's going to run?
I don't. I would, if I had a guess, it's not going to be on for
too much longer.
Yeah.
Okay. And since there's a limit as to what you can do in the schools, how about faith-based organizations? Many of them have really large youth groups. We certainly do in Arroyo Grande, and I think they do in Atascadero and Paso as well. Can you go out to those groups?
Yes.
You undoubtedly would be reaching some of the same people that you do at the school, but we know they have to hear it over and over and over and over again.
That's a great idea, and I've never thought about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have.
So if we refer a youth group to you, that would be something you could go out and do the presentation.
Anytime that we get a chance to work with youth without having to go into the school, we jump on it.
Okay.
I recently did a presentation at People's Self-Help Housing and found out that they had a program called YEEP that has an after-school activity at their locations. And I said, oh my gosh, how old are these kids? And last week I sent out two interns and myself, and we went and did presentations with these kids because they're not at school. They're at home, technically. And we're able to do interactive activities. So anytime we have a chance, we want to jump on it. And I think that's a fantastic idea.
May I ask a quick question?
Yes.
Most of my patients are buying actually e-cigarettes through online. Mm-hmm. They are not going to brick-and-mortar stores.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure it's the same for the teenagers because they're a lot more online savvy. How are we approaching them through the media that they are using? In other words, Facebook, any sort of school websites, perhaps? Is there any way you guys can reach, although you cannot go into the school, but is there a way that you can reach out to them through internet, online?
I'm going to let Grace answer that.
So we do have a SLO County Facebook page and Twitter and Instagram, which is one way we try to access youth through social media because they do use it so often. The one problem is clearly not every middle schooler follows SLO County Public Health on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. And while we try to tailor our messages to a more youthful audience by making the messages more simple, it's not text heavy. I think your idea about going through the school website would be better just because of the nature of our message. It's not one that's typically sought out by youth. You kind of have to get them, and we can't like friend them all on Facebook or do anything like that. But we do have social media, and yeah, I know we could work more with the schools without necessarily stepping our feet on their ground and actually talking to them. So that's a really good idea.
Susan?
Yeah, one other question is that this data is alarming enough in our county. Have you thought about going to the PTA organizations and showing this to the parents to see if maybe they'll get on board with some kind of education? Because it's pretty alarming to have those rates in our county.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's another good idea. I just wrote that down. I think that's a good idea to let those parents know so they can spread the word and take action, because I don't know any parent that wouldn't want to if they knew that was happening. But again, I'm hoping with, and I'm not hoping, I'm confident with the fact that the Prop 56 funds that are going to start coming and our ability to expand our tobacco control program will hopefully be able to get a better grasp on controlling this e-cigarette epidemic that's kind of happening. And to answer your question with Kathleen, I think she was going to go over more of the specifics with the budget of each different grants that we get.
We won't make you do that. We'll wait for her to come, okay?
Thank you.
Okay. So thank you again. You have inspired us, both of you. And thank you, Claire, for selecting that topic. It was of great interest. And it is a problem that is growing, and yet there's very little known about it, quite frankly, yeah, or not enough known about it. So
yeah,
thank you both.
Thank you. Okay. I can leave some cards here if you guys...
We would love it.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to leave them with Jean, we can all grab one before we head out. And I'm sure you'll be hearing from some of us some things. Next, we have Dr. Christy Mulcairn sitting in for Dr. Borenstein this evening, and she's going to do our health agency and public health report.
Thank you, commissioners. Dr. Borenstein can't be with us this evening, so I was just going to give you a quick update on what's going on in public health. With the spring has come better weather and also less flu, so that's great. Our rates are finally declining. However, we are still seeing flu, so it's not too late to get your flu shot, believe it or not, even in April. We are seeing a little bit of pertussis, a little bit of an increase in pertussis, also known as whooping cough. Luckily, we have a vaccine for pertussis, and our biggest at-risk population are the small infants, especially under 6 weeks of age, who can't get immunized themselves. So we really encourage any pregnant women to get any pregnant women and their families to get immunized to protect those infants. Next, we have an increase in cocci, which we often see, especially with all the rain that we've had. The spores, which had been dormant, grow, and then when things dry out a little bit, they go into the air, and so we're seeing a lot of cocci. A couple of other exciting things coming our way. We're having a big public health website update, so hopefully things such as when the tobacco cessation counseling classes are done will be easier to update online. It'll be more accessible to the community. We're going page by page, making sure all the content is up to date, and that's supposed to launch July 1st. Also very exciting for us, we had our communications coordinator begin her first day of work was today, and we're really excited about that because in public health, we're just trying to make sure we're reaching everybody in all corners of the county. And we think that with this new person who it just comes in with a lot of experience and enthusiasm, we think that she is going to really beef up our ability to get the word out about all the things we're doing. And last but not least, we continue to roll out our electronic health record system. So our jail medical clinic and our California Children's Services clinics are next. That will be happening in June. And over the next couple of months, we're just working hard, making sure everything is up to speed. And as public health went live with the electronic health record at the end of January. And that's all.
Any questions for her? Commissioner Smith-Cook.
Okay, so I'm the consumer on the commission here, so I'm not very medically savvy. So help me a little on cocci, spores that are causing infections, and how can I just protect myself from them?
You could stay inside your house all the time. No, I'm kidding. So, you know, COXI is, it's in the air we breathe, and some people, for some reason, you know, can breathe in COXI and just have a mild illness and get better from it. And some people it can become really serious. It often looks like a pneumonia, and but it just doesn't get better. And sometimes we also, when it gets bad, it causes fever and a bad cough. We often confuse it with tuberculosis, or at least it can look like tuberculosis in the beginning stages, except fortunately it often responds to treatment. So really, the way Dr. Borenstein speaks about COXI is it really is a, it has a lot that it fluctuates with the climate. And so with all the dry season that we had, we really had lower rates. And now with all the rain, we're starting to see an increase, which is something that has happened historically as well.
Susan?
Isn't the COXI also known as valley fever?
It is. That's correct.
Okay.
Thanks for that clarification.
And it's very prevalent in North County.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Nice to have you with us. Thank
great,
you for coming.
Great to be here. Thanks.
So let's move into commissioner updates. So why don't we start with Susan to my right?
Okay. I've been out. It wasn't valley fever, but I had that extended flu, so I'm glad to be back. But I had missed the HSOC housing committee meetings, and but I will be attending next week, so I'll have that report. What I did want to, I did catch last couple weeks ago the Homeless Services Continuum of Care meeting, and on April 25th at our meeting at 9 a.m., we're going to discuss sober living environments and the need for more beds in our particular county and what we can do to try to increase those beds. So that's on there to add some additional housing opportunities.
All right, this evening I do have a couple items. One of them is I have an update on a Medicare insurance topic for you tonight. HICAP is a statewide organization that's providing free, and yeah, that was really something free, unbiased local Medicare plan counseling via our local area agency on aging. As most of you are aware, I am one of their local counselors, and their contact information, anybody wanting some of those free services, is area code 805-928-5663. We provide guidance with initial plan enrollments and assistance through the maze of the 24 Part D drug plans. HICAP funding is mostly from the federal government, and the Trump administration has tagged it for an approximate 90% reduction in funds. What that means is many states are going to simply eliminate the program entirely. Sort of some background information is called for, which is 10,000 adults every day turn 65 years old. They're mandated to enroll in Medicare at that time. Failure to enroll accrues significant financial penalties, and those penalties can continue for the remainder of their life. The effect of the penalty has, in some ways, been to further deter enrollment by those persons that miss the deadline. Obviously not a good decision. Social Security used to be a pension plan that provided full retirement benefits at age 65. Well, by being enrolled in Social Security by age 65, it meant that Medicare enrollment was completely automatic, and therefore very few seniors missed the enrollment deadline. Now, as Social Security full retirement benefits are no longer available at age 65, but are staggered out to age 66 and beyond, it's causing many people to miss the mandatory age 65 Medicare enrollment. Our California's Department of Aging is working very hard, almost with a big stick, going to the federal government to try and make them point of the importance of the HICAP counseling program. I'm expecting a petition is going to be started soon to solicit the federal government to revisit their proposal of these massive funding cuts. And I certainly will keep this commission apprised of that effort. It's kind of interesting. Our local area on aging does have a colorful information insert that will talk about all their programs, including HICAP. It's going to be inserted in the Santa Maria Times in the next few days. It includes an action photo of our own Commissioner Jean Raymond. Nope. Yep.
Yeah.
So I also attended our oral health commission. It recently met, and we got some information about state grants, the funds that we're going to get from that grant, and we're just a few of the counties that succeeded in getting that dental grant. That's dental care for the youth. They're about to be released. I don't know how excited to get about that because they were about to be released last September. But the state is manipulating this grant and saying, you know what, there's another caveat pieces of it that we need each of those recipient counties to address and show that they're going to perform. So it's still not materializing totally yet, but we are still going to get funds. We just would like them to be flowing. And I tell you, attending these oral health commission meetings, it's almost heartbreaking the stories you hear there, such as February was dental month. So I listened to an individual. She's a school nurse for the Lucia Mar School District. She was telling the great success of all these children that got health exams during February. And so they had individuals last year that were cited as, it was about 60 of them, cited as urgent dental care needed now. Most of those came back this year still needing urgent care. It's the lack of access, the lack of funds available to low-income individuals. So that's really heartbreaking to hear that's going on. But part of that grant is going to help with funding more denta care, it's called, in our community. So I'm glad that we're going to make some progress in that. One of the more interesting stories, so I don't leave you just feeling heartbroken like I was over that one, very successful story. Autistic young individual under 18 years old. This person definitely needed urgent dental care, but for an autistic child, that meant needing sedation. That sedation was going to cost $2,000. There's no way this family could afford it. Our oral health commission and the people that sit on it, they're amazing. They rallied around and they found that $2,000, so this young individual got their dental care. So, hooray. And that's it for me.
So I also missed last week, so I'm not sure if this was spoken about already, but I'm happy to report the commission wrote a letter of support for the Regional Opioid Safety Coalition, and they did get that grant. So in case you know that, so that means that they'll be able to hire more staff and continue the great programs for that. And that's it.
Well, I'm the liaison with the County First Five Commission. And I asked Jean to print up and give everybody a copy of their most recent strategic plan. It's a wealth of information. And I think it's a very effective group that's worth knowing about. Just a couple of things that I picked up going through this again tonight. First of all, First Five focuses on the first 5 years of life, focusing on perinatal readiness, health and development, early learning, strong families, that sort of thing. It's funded by a 50-cent a pack tobacco tax that was initiated by Proposition 10 in 1998. And as tobacco use diminishes, and even though the other taxes go up, this tax is not going up. So that's a concern in terms of funding for this group. In Slo County, 1 in 6 of these 0 to 5-year-old kids live with a single mother, and half of those live in poverty. Another illustrating statistic is that about half of school-age kids qualify for free and reduced lunch programs at school. Half of our kids. So this is a group that does really good work. I'm so impressed sitting at their meetings. They disperse about $2 million a year, and a fair amount of that is apparently matched by the state First Five group. So anyway, read through this as you can. It's worth doing.
I wanted to mention that the 2016 report from the Action for Healthy Communities, the Action Slow report, came out. And this is a report that is done, it's been done since 1999, and every 3 years the project resurveys with a survey that is professionally done. And pretty costly through the Community Foundation and collaborative partners. So they use primary and secondary data. The primary data is a survey that is done here community-wide. It's done through participating organizations as well as phone calls directly to individuals who live in the county, and it's done in both English and Spanish. The data is compiled, and it is pure data that is reported out. It gives a snapshot of what some of the health concerns in the community are by residents of the community, and it's been a snapshot since 1999 of every 3 years. You can see the changes as we've had economic changes, but also changes as we've improved programs in some areas and other programs have gone away. It's an excellent source of data, which certainly we like up here because it helps give us a picture of some of the health concerns. It's open to the public. It's something that I really strongly encourage anybody who's looking for funding or looking at whether or not there are statistics to back up concerns they have or trends that they're seeing. It is available at actionslow.org. It can be downloaded in a PDF. The report is just simply the data that is reported out, and then through the rest of the 3 years, the Community Foundation does more detailed reports on selected items that really kind of stood out that were areas of concern. A couple of years ago, water was really an issue, so they looked at the fact of what was the impact of that and what were some of the concerns for local residents that had to do specifically with that. Homeless was another area that was looked at. So that's it. I just wanted to remind you.
No updates.
Sorry. I was reading my notes, trying to get my act together. I attended the FEPAC meeting last week. That's the Public Health Emergency Preparedness. And a couple of exciting things. Our lab's been received a grant for some fancy new lab equipment. Dr. Beebe was very excited about it, which is really going to make us for very high-tech, our county. We're going to have something that like three counties around will be using, a whole genome sequencer that's going to allow them to really identify things very quickly. And so it's very exciting. They also talked about, we've had a couple of interesting outbreaks in the last couple of months. It was very interesting. Public Health was talking about a meningitis event on Cal Poly, which as a previous infection control nurse, I was all over that. Glad I wasn't working. Some norovirus outbreak, and that was pretty big. And then let me just go through my notes. FEPAX, they're in the process of getting their grant guidance for the next year, which is the federal money that's given to our county to go to the hospitals and other agencies for preparedness, and it's being cut all over. But we were very lucky that our counties, because we have four hospitals, the smaller counties got totally cut. We didn't get cut at all this year, but worry about it every year. And there's going to be a training for the Reserve Medical Corps, and the Reserve Medical Corps is a group of volunteers who are coordinated through Public Health that are called upon if there was some sort of an emergency, could be deployed or here in the county. So they're going to have a training next week on April 19th, and they wanted to make sure people understood you don't have to necessarily be a medical person to be in the reserve medical corps. So if you're someone that either is a retired nurse or physician or someone else and you're interested in being involved, I'm on it. It's really pretty great. So recommend, if you're interested, call public health and they can give you the information about the training. And then a couple of drills. Our county will be participating in the statewide drill, which is not until November, but it's something that we plan for all year. All the hospitals are involved, and it just helps keep us prepared for different events. Every year it's something different. Next year it's going to be a bioterrorism event. This last year it was a flu. It was an infectious.
I was not able to attend the Adult Services Policy Council meeting last Friday, so no report.
Well, we'll excuse you this time. Go ahead. Did you go?
Oh, you said that.
So we'll get a report next time from there. Okay. All right. I have just a couple of things. The San Luis Obispo County Food System Coalition has an upcoming meeting on April 18th. They're going to be talking about farm-to-school and local food sourcing in our public schools. They have moved the event to the Copeland Health Education Pavilion, thinking that they will have a much larger attendance during this. So this is something that they've been working on for a while, and since we're in an area where we have so much local produce and everything, why it should be a very good meeting, very enlightening. The Healthy Communities Work Group, we continue to meet monthly. We're now getting things from a couple of the cities around the county to look from a planning perspective, still working on all kinds of climate change things as well as developing healthy communities themselves. At our meeting last week, Gina, that was here last month with us, that talked about the GIS system from environmental health. She was there to tell us about there is a new app that comes out of the environmental health department. It's called eatsafeslow.org. And it's the results of all the, you know, how they inspect the restaurants in the county. So the results are in there with the grades. Now, part of what you have to understand is any place that has any kind of food is on the list. So like Home Goods is on there and Target is on there and whatever. So if rather than look, so it could take you a while to look through them, but there are a couple of ways to get around that. One of them is if you just call up the worst rated ones, you get a much smaller list, thank God. And also, if you have a particular restaurant that you want to check out, if you call that restaurant up, that is much easier to check out as well. And then lastly, and I think she said that, you know, when they were here last time, we were talking about the safe surf and the beach water issue. They worked on getting that phone number up in a more prominent space or spot for everybody to look at. Lastly, from me, the Community-Based Organization Preventive Health Grant Committee has completed their process and made their recommendations for funding. It will go before the Board of Supervisors in June when they do their county budget hearings. I don't have the figures with me here, and maybe after June we'll get those figures for you. But we went back and did a historical review this year to see how much had been funded over, I think we looked at a 10-year period, and it was astonishing for me. We are in a very generous county, and we have supported our nonprofits very well in the community, in the county here. So let's move on to some of our committee reports. Any budget, I'm sure, didn't meet. Legislative, neither. Community education. How about nominating? Claire, anything coming from there?
Yes, we're going to be looking for recommending a slate of officers for the next year for 17-18, so mm-hmm. I'll be soliciting if anyone's interested in being an officer or has a recommendation. Let me know.
Shall we just email you or Jean just, or?
Why don't you, what's the best way, Jean? Why don't you email either way and I'll get it.
Okay.
Thanks.
And let's see, we make that selection in June, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for your hard work on that committee. Prospective future items. I know that we actually had a great planning meeting in December, and we've planned out for a number of our upcoming agendas and program topics. We will, of course, be having another planning meeting in July to further plan out some of those meetings. But did anybody have anything this evening? Okay. So I think we'll move on to adjournment. Remind you, our next meeting is May the 8th. Our topic is the new marijuana legislation, and I believe Jeff Hamm will be here with us that evening, so that should be a good topic. I wish for this evening we could have filled the room here with kids. You know, we should have really gotten after them. We'll have to think about how we can do that for some of our topics or whatever. So anybody have anything else for this evening? If not, we'll be adjourned.